Welcome on into this Thursday, July the 3rd edition of Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Charlie Long, taking until 8 o'clock tonight. At 6:35, we're going to be talking to Rick Shea, president of Major League Eating, as we get ready for the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest tomorrow at Coney Island. And Jaws is back. Joey Chestnut has returned to the competition. Last year had to sit out due to a sponsorship, I guess you would say, dispute. He was the Impossible Burger or Impossible Hot Dog was ended up sponsoring that, and that was a conflict with Nathan's, so he was not taking part in the competition last year. I guess that has run out for him, so he's back in the mix this year. We're going to talk more with Rich Shea about that soon. Then in the 7 o'clock hour, we'll be dipping into some more of our NBA talk with Chris Dotson, NBA media and scout. Some of the latest going-ons around the league, plus, well, a bit of a head-scratcher today, Charlie. Getting official word, definitely, now from the Pelicans about them announcing that they have waived guard Antonio Reeves. 6'5", 205, appeared in 44 regular season games for the Pels last season, averaged 7 points, 1.4 rebounds, an assist, 15 minutes a game. He also appeared in 11 games last season for the Birmingham Squadron, the G League affiliate, averaging 25 points a game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and 38.5 minutes per game. Originally selected with the 47th overall selection in the 2024 NBA draft out of University of Kentucky. Jeez, I can't talk today. Reeves holds collegiate averages of 15 points, 3 rebounds, and 1.3 assists while shooting 452 from the floor, 384 from three-point range, and 801 from the free throw line over 5 college seasons with Illinois State and Kentucky. And it just seemed like a guy that was kind of coming on last season in the last couple of games. I'm looking here. What is it? The last 10 games of the season, that his numbers were way bumped up from his season averages, and 12.6 points per game, 51% from three-point line, and 51% field goal percentage. I just curious to know why the move from the Pelicans here. I know a lot of other folks I've been seeing on social media questioning how is Antonio Reeves gone from the Pelicans. Meanwhile, you've got a guy like Jordan Hawkins still on the roster.
I think they chose Hawkins over Reeves, ultimately. And Reeves, listen, once again, the contract was not the issue here. Mike and I talked about that. He had signed a 3-year, $5.4 million contract with the Pelicans after getting drafted with the 47th overall pick. The Pels trade those future pick swaps in the second round to Orlando in 2030 and 2031 to make sure that they got the 47th overall pick, which is what they used to take Reeves. And as you kind of mentioned there, Steve, basically in the final 3 weeks, maybe you could say like 2.5 weeks of the season, when the Pelicans were dealing with all the injuries that they had and they'd shut down all these different guys, I remember I had a video that had taken really late in the season where you were just looking through the injured list for the Pelicans and who was going to play a certain night.
Yeah.
I want to say it was the game against like the Bucks on April 6th, and nobody was available. So they got some run with Antonio Reeves late in the year, starting with basically, you know, Monday, January 24th against Philly, all the way through April 13th against OKC. Reeves was getting a ton of minutes and he was getting some playing time. The tape is out there. So if a team wants to go pick him up, they absolutely can. And I think that's what's going to happen because he showed that he can play some NBA minutes. I mean, the issue with Reeves is the defensive deficiencies because his build. He is a slim 6'5" guard that's not going to be able to ever get in front of a forward if he wants to play the wing. So he's going to have to be a two. Like there's no kind of tweener here. He's not a three, definitely nowhere further than a three. He is strictly a two just because of his build. And he can't play elite defense because of his size. But he showed the shot-making capabilities. You saw multiple different games late in the season where he was lighting it up from three-point range, Steve. And I know the numbers ultimately ended up basically in the final month being 34% from three, but that was on about 7 attempts. He was putting them up, and they were letting him put them up because they wanted to get their look at him. In that stretch in April, Steve, 33.3 minutes per game, 16 points per game on almost 14 shot attempts. So once again, the numbers went up when he got more minutes. He has the NBA tape out there. If a team wants to go pick him up, they absolutely can. at first it's a little bit puzzling to me, but then I remember we talked, because we spoke with Joel Myers earlier in the week mm-hmm. about Summer League, and he had mentioned the three draft picks and that he was hoping to see Antonio Reeves out there as well. Well, Reeves has now been waived by the Pelicans, and they're going a different direction. So definitely a little bit of a surprise at first, and then you realize when we had spoken with Ali Cassell earlier in the week, he said that the bench guys are going to be the ones that could be the odd men out, right? With Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver building out their roster, if there's a spot for a player that they prefer, they're going to kind of get their guy and then move on from another guy. And maybe Micah Peavy takes that spot, the second-round pick from Georgetown this past year, who's more of a wing that can play the two and potentially the three at the NBA level because he's got a little bit more size to him than Antonio Reeves. He's not nearly as good of a shooter, or at least as consistent of a shooter as Antonio Reeves was. But that's kind of what I'm expecting, is maybe they want, you know, the 23-year-old second-round pick that they scooped up out of Georgetown to have NBA minutes right off the bat, Steve.
Yeah, it was just, you know, curious because you saw a young budding prospect, still just 24 years old for Reeves, obviously just year two going into his second season in the NBA. And I'm curious, like, what is the rationale here? Is there something else coming soon on the horizon with this roster?
You know,
it feels like it for sure.
You would imagine so. And just looking at the game logs here, Steve, in about six of his last seven games, I believe, and this is in April, once again, when the increased minutes were there, he made multiple three-pointers in six of his last seven games. He was getting them up. He was making them, putting out that good tape. But still, Dumars and Weaver, I guess, were not a fan. So, unfortunately, the Pelicans move on from him. As we mentioned, it's not having anything to do with the salary cap hit for an
minimal
Antonio
savings,
Reeves,
right?
The number is just not big at all. The 3 years and $5.4 million that he signed last year as a second-round pick, That is negligible at best. So this was all about fit for what they wanted on their bench, and they decided to move on from Antonio Reeves. It is a little bit head-scratching, but ultimately, as we've mentioned before, this is Dumars and Weaver deciding which players that they want on this roster, and people will just think that includes starters. It also obviously includes the bench and the depth of this roster as well.
Got to say, you got me pretty good going into the top of the hour here saying, you know, given the latest news too out in the NBA free agency that that Jackson Hayes has agreed to a 1-year deal to return to, and I thought you were going to tell me the Pelicans, and it's like, no, he's returning to the LA Lakers. Thankfully, Jackson Hayes is not coming to New Orleans here. So after getting a big yesterday and Ayton, the Lakers adding some more depth to that spot, bringing back a guy like Jackson Hayes, who he was just kind of wasting away on their bench as well.
Congrats.
Sure.
What? I don't really understand. Jackson Hayes was unplayable. And if you want to talk, we've talked about, you know, the moves that David Griffin made. Some of them were good. Some of them were bad. Maybe one of the most consequential moves he made in his time as the lead executive of the Pelicans was trading off of the fourth pick in 2019. And giving up the chance to draft Darius Garland to move down in the draft and take Jackson Hayes with the eighth pick and Nikhil Alexander-Walker with the 17th pick. You know, that was a mistake, a major, major mistake. But Jackson Hayes, you know, they bought into the athleticism. Oh, you know, with him and Zion, you'll have a ridiculously athletic front court for the future. Hayes did not have the work ethic to reach his full potential at the NBA level. J.J. Redick, with a roster without any size for the Lakers this past postseason, they were getting eaten alive by Rudy Gobert, Julius Randle, and he still refused to play Jackson Hayes. That's how bad Hayes was. He couldn't see the floor against a team that was killing them in the paint in the postseason. And you want to know why the Lakers got beat in five games by the Timberwolves, who were underdogs entering that series?
Lack of length.
They did not have a big man.
Right.
And so you go out and get DeAndre Ayton, and I know that Zach Lowe from The Ringer has talked about this, and it's really funny. It's going to be entertaining seeing Laker fans talk themselves into DeAndre Ayton, who's been an underachiever at the NBA level since being the first overall pick back in 2018. But, you know, you also bring back Jackson Hayes, and he's entering, I think, year seven as well. So good for him for getting another payday, I guess. But once again, he was unplayable in a postseason setting. JJ would start him for the Lakers against the Timberwolves, and he would play 5 minutes, and then he wouldn't touch the floor again. Because he was that bad. The minutes were that terrible. So Jackson Hayes, you know, he never reached his potential as a former lottery pick. Some players don't do that. It is what it is. Unfortunately, he started his career with the Pelicans, and they ended up choosing him and Nikhil Alexander-Walker over someone like Darius Garland, who ended up being an all-star guard for Cleveland. So that's unfortunate. But
Nikhil was at least a solid add.
But Nikhil is kind of reached his potential with other teams.
Right, yeah.
Like, he reached it with Minnesota. He was a solid bench player on a playoff team that made it to the Western Conference Finals, and good for Nikhil. And now he's moved on, I think, to Atlanta this offseason in free agency. But Jackson Hayes, I mean, he was a disaster. And so they're bringing him back. I'm a little bit surprised by that, to be honest, Steve. And it's really funny because I think Shams had posted something about it after he made the announcement that emerges the Lakers starting center, Jackson Hayes, last season and shot a career high 72.2% from the field and finished top 10 in field goal percentage allowed as a contested defender on layups and dunks among players to contest 250 shots. Why wasn't he available in the playoffs? And why did he get played off the floor by Rudy Gobert? I don't know. Rudy's a defensive guy. He's never been known for his offense. And the Lakers had no answer for him or Julius Randle. So that's my response to all this with the Lakers signing Jackson Hayes for another year. Congrats. I mean, you got DeAndre Ayton from Portland. You're going to be able to talk yourselves into him and see what he can give you, you know, with Luka Doncic at the point guard spot, with Ayton at center. But, I mean, between him and Jackson Hayes, like, do the Lakers have an intimidating front court? I would say unequivocally, no.
Well, hopefully this kind of silences the rumors out there that the L.A. Lakers were kind of had their sights set on Yves Missy, and trying to acquire him from the Pelicans.
I talked with Jen Hill about this yesterday, Steve. I think the whole thing with Ayton kind of silenced that with Missy. I think Missy's a core piece of this Pelicans future.
Agreed.
And similar to how Jake Fisher, as I mentioned in my triple option segment, said that Herb Jones is a core piece of the Pelicans and they're not moving on from him. They view Missy the same way. And there's more growth for Missy, by the way. Like, he was really good as a rookie, but there is still potential that he has untapped. And so that is really, really exciting if you're a Pelican fan. And I would just not give up Missy, especially because the Lakers, who are the team that was interested in him, really don't have any assets that are worth anything to trade. That's just my opinion.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. You can sound off with us. What are you up to on the eve of 4th of July, getting everything ready for your big barbecue and pool party tomorrow? Sound off on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. It's 504-260-1870. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk right after this on WWL. We believe in the power of being everywhere, folks. Listen to WWL anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app. Tune in and now on the iHeartRadio app. Get the WWL shows you love and the local content you crave on Odyssey. Tune in and the iHeartRadio app. Well, some news just coming in once again from Michael Scotto, NBA reporter, saying Pelicans and Trey Alexander have agreed to a two-way deal. Alexander appeared in 24 games for the Denver Nuggets last season, averaged 25.8 points, 5.7 rebounds, 5.6 assists, and 1.6 steals in the G League. And looking at some of those accolades he's gotten, was NBA G League Rookie of the Year, Charlie, 6'4", 185-pound shooting guard out of Creighton.
Yeah, we'll talk with Chris Dotson a little bit about this, but this strikes me as someone that's going to be part of the Birmingham squadron and maybe someone that works his way into the back of the Pelicans bench rotation. Someone that didn't get too many minutes in his rookie campaign, but did start to make a career for himself after being undrafted in 2024.
Does this kind of move coincide with the release of Reeves because they needed to fill they got a roster spot here that they needed? We'll have to wait and find out more about that, but seeing here a little bit, Alexander, he grew up in Oklahoma City, attended a high school there, was named the Oklahoma Gatorade Player of the Year, averaging 24 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals as a senior, was rated a 4-star recruit in November of 2020. He was committed to playing basketball for Auburn over other offers from Arkansas, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and Kansas. He then decommitted at the end of his senior season and later signed on to play for Creighton. So waiting to find out more about this move for the Pels, and I'm just wondering, you know, does this kind of coincide with the release of Austin Reeves for the Pels, freeing up another a roster spot?
Antonio? No, I don't
think
so.
What did I say?
Austin. It was the Lakers. I don't think so, Steve. I think the whole thing with Reeves in the roster that they're building right now, once again, Micah Peavy, the second-round pick from Georgetown, I think they're going to want to give him minutes right off the bat as a rookie. You know, and maybe we'll see what he does in summer league next week, right? Because that's going to play a part of it too. It's, we get our first look at all three of the draft picks with Jeremiah Fears, the 7th overall pick, with Derek Queen, the 13th overall pick, and then Micah Peavy, the 40th overall pick in the second round, part of that trade that they had with Sadiq Bey and Jordan Poole coming to New Orleans in return for Kelly Olynyk, CJ McCollum, and a future second-round pick. So, you know, Peavy is going to probably be in that number as far as the wings go. And it also depends on what, you know, Willie Green will do with this roster, what Joe Dumars has envisioned for this roster as far as the guards, the wings, and then the big men, right? Like, so, you know, do you consider Herb Jones a two or a three? Right? He'll probably play different lineups depending on who they're playing and who he has to guard, the best player on the opposite floor, which is what makes him so valuable. So Micah Peavy, I think, plays into that, the reason to drop Antonio Reeves, and then also, you know, potentially someone like Jordan Hawkins. If there is a spot for him on this roster, I think that it was probably a contention between him and Reeves.
Going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to get into some major league eating. The president will join us, Rick Shea, talking about the 4th of July celebration going on in Coney Island, Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest. I want to remind everybody, WWL and the Riverfront Marketing Group invite you to go forth on the river. Join us an Independence Day celebration along with historic New Orleans Riverfront, along the historic New Orleans Riverfront, for a world-class free fireworks display. That's tomorrow at 9 p.m. Come out early to enjoy the pleasures of the French Quarter in downtown New Orleans, hotels, museums, restaurants, and bars, followed by an awesome fireworks synchronized display to patriotic music over the mighty Mississippi River. Once again, 9 p.m. Viewing is great from both banks. Be there when we light up the skies and celebrate America's birthday. Go forth on the river from the Riverfront Marketing Group and WWL and our sister station, Magic 101.9 FM. You can also find all this info at WWL.com. Taking a break, we'll be back with more of Sports Talk, so stay tuned right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Tomorrow, 4th of July, and you know what that means, the Nathan's famous hot dog eating contest. To help us break that all down and talk about it, president of Major League Eating, Rick Shea, joins us on the line. Rich, so thanks so much for the time. How you been, man?
I'm great. I'm so happy to speak to you guys. I'm a big fan of New Orleans and done thousands of events down there with Rouse's and Acme and others. So I'm thrilled to be talking to you on the eve of the big event, the Nathan's Contest.
Yes, indeed. Appreciate it. How has this sport been evolving over the years? Because I know the 4th of July gets a ton of focus, but man, oh man, it just seems that so many other events keep on popping up and different foods being brought into the mix as well.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. You know, obviously the 4th of July is sort of our Masters, our Super Bowl, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Out there in Coney Island, July 4th, high noon. It's sort of it's an ESPN broadcast, huge American holiday. But we're on the road many, many weekends, you know. So this spring we've been, you know, I was in Memphis one weekend and, you know, with an event called Smoke Slam. I was in Knoxville the other weekend, an event called, you know, Dead End Barbecue. I was in Washington, D.C. another weekend with the Glazed Donuts for Donut Day by Salvation Army. I mean, all kinds of events we have, and we're starting to stack our calendar for the fall. And so it's evolved in that we do a lot more regional events. You know, when George and I started this thing, it was really primarily just the 4th of July and maybe Buffalo Wings. And then we actually were lucky to add Acme Oyster during Quarter Fest, and then Acme Oyster did its own Oyster Fest. And that's kind of how it evolves. People, you go to a venue or you go to a town and there's a festival, or you know, they like it and they bring you back. So we've been very fortunate. We've been able to go overseas too. So like whether it's Bangkok or Singapore or the UK. So it's kind of crazy, but it's certainly grown.
I know big time this year is the return of Joey Chestnut Jaws to the hot dog eating competition. What impact do you anticipate on the viewership and just overall interest in competitive eating with him back?
Well, certainly, Joey's our 16-time champion in Coney Island, so not having him last year was a drag, but we still had a huge crowd out there, and the ratings didn't actually take that much of a dip, primarily because it is that 4th of July hot dog eating contest people tune into and attend. It's like a bucket list event to attend. But no doubt, having Joey back is huge. I mean, this is a guy who once ate 76 Nathan's hot dogs and buns. You know, put a little perspective on it, the last two times he competed, once was 62 hot dogs and buns, and one was 63. And I was with him today in my office, and he's aware of that. He's really gunning to get back up to that 76 level. But the thing is, he's become sort of a hero out there in Coney Island. And so when he comes out on the stage, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a raucous welcome, a hero's welcome for sure.
Yeah, we got to see him around a couple years back for a pizza eating competition. It was great stuff.
Fat Boys, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just curious, like, how do these ideas come up for different food eating events and what goes into that?
You think about a group like Fat Boys, right? So they have seen the success that Rouse's and Acme had had. They've probably seen the 4th of July, no doubt. And then, you know, I think they were opening an old Metairie, and the owner was, like, looking for something to do as sort of a one-year anniversary party, you know, and looking for a peg, looking for, you know, some production value. So we went down there, and then I think he brought it to Baton Rouge. We do some sales, but not as much as we should. We're very fortunate to get calls from people like Fat Boys or a festival, you know, like the Sweet Corn Festival in West Palm Beach or whatever it might be, and they want to look for something on their stage that's going to draw fans or draw attendance and entertain that crowd. And we've been very fortunate to be able to do that. And the other guys like Joey, eaters like Mickey Sudo, our boy from Baton Rouge, Adrian Morgan, the Boudin eating champion of Lafayette. So it's these eaters that I credit a lot of it to, because people like to go to these events I know what it means to have like a Boudin or one donut. I don't know what it means to have 5 pounds of Boudin or 62 donuts, right? So to see that is just, it's kind of like people get awestruck.
Do you know what it takes for these contestants to put their bodies through this and what it takes to train to become a competitive eater?
Yeah, I mean, I see them all the time on the road. And you know, it's one thing I'll answer that like this. These guys are dedicated. They go to a lot of events. Don't try it in your backyard. We have safety protocols in place like you would at a NASCAR race or a football game. But they're incredible competitors. You know, if you go back 20 years, the bulk of our eaters at this event were kind of heavy set guys and sort of like thick set gals, and they would look like buffet busters. And then, like, you know, around 2008, it really shifted, and they were more like X game athletes and traditional athletes, triathletes and marathon runners and things like that, bodybuilders. And that's what you'll see on the ESPN broadcast tomorrow. There's not a lot of heavy set folks that you might see walking down Bourbon Street. These guys look like you'd see them running track at LSU.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there any kind of qualities you look for to be a top tier competitive eater beyond the ability just to be able to consume large amounts of food?
Well, I think the quality you see is, like, it kind of comes up with what I was just talking about. It's like these traditional athletes who have the discipline and focus. They literally watch tapes of their performances. They watch tapes of other people's performances. They study it. They get a mouthfeel for the food. They treat it like a traditional sport. And that's why I think these more traditional athletes, as they age, they kind of get into our game. I think that's what happened. That's part of the evolution.
Talking with Rick Shea, the president of Major League Eating, and curious, how long has the MLE been around, and what made you how'd you come up with the idea to start all this?
Yeah, my mom always laughs. It's like my brother and I started it. It's like we started a club in the back of our yard and named ourselves president. No, we did PR for Nathan's Famous when we started our PR firm back in 1997. We started doing this, you know, Nathan's Famous, that contest predates us, and my brother was doing the PR for it, but it was just a one-day-a-year thing, and get a couple cameras. We kind of fell in love with it, leaned into it. So then comes 2000, we were making it bigger, and we started Major League Eating as the governing body of stomach-centric sport to advance the sport safely and maintain its integrity, and the rest is history. But no one was archiving these things, you know, so there were, you know, contests happening all over the place. And, you know, one of our first ones that I mentioned was in Buffalo. We had another one in Canada that was like flapjacks or pancakes, right? And no one was archiving the results. And so we kind of came in and became that governing body. And it's been a lot of fun, and we've had some success.
Yeah, you've mentioned some of the other foods so far, but beyond this 4th of July contest coming up tomorrow, what are some of the other MLE eating events that you believe deserve more public attention?
Once you have these level of eater at these events, you know, it is kind of upsetting when you get to an event. It's just kind of, there's not, it's a town, like we were in Manor, Texas, about 30 minutes out of Austin. You know, James Webb ate, I think, 8 pounds of barbecued sausage, but, you know, there was not enough media there to capture it. The crowd liked it. Another one. It's another small media market on the east end of Long Island in Mattituck, and it's a Lions Club, like, sort of summer fair. It's really perfect. And this guy Esper, who's competing tomorrow, Jeff Esper, ate 23 pounds of strawberry shortcake in 8 minutes. It's astounding, but it just didn't hit the news. It didn't hit the socials, really. So, you know, that just, that happens. But more often than not, our stuff gets out there.
And talk a little bit about this guy from Baton Rouge that's going to be competing. He's been around, I know, for a little bit, in Adrian Morgan. Seen the world record holder, too, having 20 hard-boiled eggs in just 84 seconds. That's unreal.
It is unreal. Adrian is a trained baker, so he's baked in some of the better restaurants in New Orleans, and he's now living in Baton Rouge. He went to LSU. He's a one-time Acme Oyster Eating champion. I forget how many dozen. I think 36 dozen or 38 dozen. Forgive me.
Okay.
That was maybe 8 or 10 years ago. So that was out in out by the river, down by the quarter, by Jack's Brewery. You know, he's been around. He was a very big eater for a long time. He took a bit of a hiatus. He was working in Houston and just had a kid, and he sort of laid back, and now he's back, and it was lovely to see him. I was with him in Memphis at a pulled pork eating contest called Smoke Slam, and I'm thrilled that he came back here to New York to compete in this event. He's a fan favorite.
And, you know, everybody seems to have a betting app nowadays, and everyone's got one on their phone. Just curious your perspective on the increasing interest in competitive eating from a sports betting standpoint.
That's funny. I got that. It's a great question. I got it posed to me by this Wall Street Journal guy earlier today, and I forget how I answered it. I try to be consistent. But, it's like there's a lot of eyeballs and a lot of attention on this. So you can imagine that if people are betting on ping pong, they can certainly bet on something that has a little bit more awareness. And I'm actually, we've done work with DraftKings and some of the others, so I'm not betting, but I'm glad it's happening on a registered, regulated platform rather than the back alleys of Brooklyn or the bodegas here in New York.
All right, so the big event is tomorrow. We know about the ladies are up first. What time does the competition? What time can folks tune into ESPN to watch the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest?
So the hardcore can start streaming on ESPN3 at 9:30 Central.
Wow.
At 11 Central, that's like the hardcore. At 11 Central, ESPN2, we go live from Coney Island. It's a full hour. You'll see both the full ladies competition, Mickey Sudo going for her unprecedented 11th women's belt, and then that is followed by Joey Chestnut return to Coney Island, battling Pat Bertoletti, last year's champ, as you mentioned, Adrian Morgan, Jeff Esper, and it all wrap up at noon Central.
Awesome stuff, Rich. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time and helping promote the sport, because it's the 4th of July tradition, and I know that, as much as folks seem to be a little grossed out by it, it's something you just can't seem to not watch.
I think it's physical poetry, and thanks for the time, and God bless New Orleans.
Thank you, Rick Shea, president of Major League Eating, joining us there. Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest. Man, oh, man, I think maybe in a total year, Charlie, I might eat 5 hot dogs total.
It's more than that for me, but I never really want to tune into it. Like, I used to have it on in the background from time to time, but, and I know that's like a tradition. July 4th, people turn on ESPN at noon and watch it. It's just not really my thing.
I as crazy as it is, I still do look at it as an event like a Kentucky Derby.
Really?
Yeah, it's like it is something yearly that I don't want to miss. So I'll be tuned in tomorrow morning to see the action from Coney Island. I want to hear from you on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. You think you could be a competitive eater? Curious how many oysters you could take down. Or we heard him say there has been a boudin eating contest as well. Sound off on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Coming back right after this on WWL. Plenty of 4th of July festivities here on WWL tomorrow. We mentioned to listen to Go Forth on the River. That'll be starting at 9 p.m. tomorrow. Also, 1 o'clock, we'll have WWL's CBS Independence Day special as America celebrates its 249th birthday. Gil Gross will take us on an America journey and how we got here, exploring the middle years of the revolution when doubts and sacrifices were high, with Pulitzer Prize winner Rich Atkinson. Also, you hear a story that you never heard. For decades, our founding fathers believed the nation would not survive. Why? We'll uncover the Tory story, what happened to the colonists who sided with England, and where they went. Then we'll look at the fiery debate over the Constitution, meet the overseas characters who helped us win the war, and we'll discover the surprising story behind God Bless America, a song its composer kept in a desk drawer for 21 years. That's wild, because he thought it wasn't very good. Don't miss our Independence Day special with Gil Gross from CBS News Radio tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 4 o'clock on WWL. And, Charlie, we kind of got like those senior blues right now where we're just itching to get out the door because tomorrow's an off day for us thanks to the 4th of July.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. The 3-day weekend, you know, we got our stuff sent in. Really keeping my fingers crossed. The Jonathan Kuminga stuff kind of getting held off a little bit, Steve. But, you know, we talked with Nick Friedell about it last night. For the folks that don't know, the Pelicans were one of the teams that showed interest in Jonathan Kuminga. The restricted free agent, young forward, 22 years old, from the Golden State Warriors, the 7th overall pick back in the 2021 NBA draft. And, Steve, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening with him. Because I told this to Nick last night. I think the least likely scenario is that Kuminga just returns and stays in Golden State. I think they're going to get something for him. He's going to sign a big contract somewhere else. It's just a matter of who does it. And some of the franchises that I brought up that I've heard are connected with Kuminga, outside of New Orleans, it's like Sacramento, you know, Chicago, Miami, I think is connected as well. And a couple other teams on top of that. So we'll just have to see what ends up happening with the Kuminga saga. From what we've heard, It's kind of in a holding pattern right now where neither side is blinking. Part of the reason for that is because Kuminga thinks that he could potentially be, if not a max player, quote unquote, close to a max player, as Friedell was mentioning last night. And he's just not going to get that money, Steve, because there's not that money to give out unless you're like the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets are the only team in the NBA with cap space. And that's part of the new rules and the new CBA. But we'll eventually see what happens and what unfolds with the Jonathan Kuminga thing. But the fact that, as we had mentioned earlier, Herb Jones being considered a core piece of this Pelicans team for the future by Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver, I don't think the Pelicans will end up being the destination for Jonathan Kuminga.
When you look at this Pels roster as it currently stands, is there a position you would like to see Joe Dumars target? For me, it's definitely point guard because, yeah, you know, you got the young rookie in Jeremiah Fears. I feel like Jordan Poole coming in could slot over there, but I'd rather see him at shooting guard. And you also have, you know, Jose Alvarado. I guess Jordan Hawkins could play some point.
No.
But other than that, there's really that position still a big need for me on this squad.
Poole's kind of a combo guard, Steve, so he can play
right point
at least until DeJounte Murray gets healthy. As if DeJounte Murray is on this roster, who knows what the Pelicans front office is thinking of him with that coming back from that torn Achilles that he suffered in January of this past year. So we'll have to figure out what ends up happening with DeJounte. But while he's gone, you imagine that Jordan Poole is going to be taking the lead point guard duties despite being a combo guard. And then you have Jeremiah Fears and Jose Alvarado at the point guard spot. So maybe if you're going to go get another point guard, it would be as a replacement for Jose. Or maybe the Pelicans like Jose. We just don't really know. They're making their decisions based off of what they like on this bench and what they want to replace.
Yeah, looking elsewhere, I feel like, you know, you're pretty set at the big position at center.
Yeah, I agree.
And then the forward spot, too, there's almost an overload of guys. So another guard to this roster would definitely look nice at this moment. I just don't know if you're going to give up anyone. Well, who would that be? Because, right now I don't think there's much on the free agent market that's still out there.
That's my question. If you're not going to give up Herb Jones, right, in a potential Kuminga trade, look, we differ on this, I believe, because I value Trey Murphy more than Herb.
Right.
Trey is one of the most untouchable pieces on this entire roster to me, unless you can give up or get in return a deal like what, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies got for Desmond Bane from the Orlando Magic. And it makes sense for both sides to where Memphis was able to extend Jaren Jackson Jr., but they move on from Desmond Bane, who gets, you know, to go to Orlando, and Orlando kind of has their now big three with Paolo, Franz, and Bane. If you can get, like, 4 first-round picks and a young asset or something like that for Trey Murphy, different conversation. I can understand moving on from him there. But if we're talking about for a Jonathan Kuminga deal, no, I wouldn't do that. I think that Trey Murphy's better than Kuminga.
Right.
So you're not going to move on from Murphy. You're not going to move on from Herb, reportedly. What is the deal?
His value is just too great with that contract he's got right now.
Exactly. So what would the deal even look like at that point? It would have to probably be something centered on Hawkins and picks, but even then, with the money that Kuminga is going to command, I don't think that would work for the Pelicans. That's why I'm saying I think that they're out of the Kuminga sweepstakes.
Heading to our top of the hour news break. More NBA talk coming up after the break with Chris Dotson, NBA media and scout. Also, hear what Spencer Rattler had to say. Coming back after this.